Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Margaret, your backyard Labrish host for the evening. Hope you're all chilling in the backyard and just ready to go down memory lane in the beautiful island of Jamaica. And this evening, we are going to have some real good memories from our guest that we had last week, George Graham. We are going to go on a nostalgic journey to our island. And actually, we're going to be reading some of his memories from Jamaica Remembered. And how that book is described is, if you're feeling homesick, you'll be comforted by meandering through the pages of Jamaica Remembered. Visit with the Snowball Man, ride a runaway horse or a raunchy donkey, and travel the gravel roads in a car. Recall the smell of the docks and the aroma of mango thyme, and taste the dip and fall back, and a fellowship of the rum shop. And George did all of that in his book. All of that in his book. And I am just want to welcome you to the backyard and to the Labrish. And we do not have a special guest this evening. However, we've got some memories from George's book that we're going to share with you, and hopefully some of our listeners will be able to relate to some of these memories, and we will just really, really think of the good old days when we were growing up on the island. And I know for me personally, I have so much wonderful memories, and the thing about it is that during the time all of this was going on, you really didn't think of them as being so cool, as the young folks say now. But, you know, when you look back, you realize that those were some good days. And I wanted to just share with you one of George's memories that I personally can relate to. And this one is called Tangerines at the Roadside. As the old car struggled around the hairpin turns, boy, we remember those, climbing higher and higher, we could come to a place of rich red earth and lush greenery. We leaned to shacks, we would call them, would appear at the roadsides and seemed like they were just standing on their own. And the carts outside of these lean-to shacks would be filled with strings of yellow and orange fruit. They would actually string them up on a string, I remember. Pressed by the carload of children, my father would have to stop. Then we would hear bare feet slapping on the ground as the vendors ran to toss their fruits at us. Big plums, tangerines, rich hulled and really just wonderful looking, pale oranges, firm yet yielding to the touch, grapefruits as big as your head. Oh boy, do I remember those. Mandarins and oranges that we just knew were just so good. We always bought the tangerines, a dozen or more strung together with a bark or whiff for perhaps sixpence, certainly no more than a shilling. Boy, remember those days when we had shillings and pounds. Ripping the soft rind away and filling our fingers with the juicy pegs, we children would stuff ourselves, the juice running down our chins, and the citrus aroma pervading the car. The miles pass easily then as the old car thumped along towards home. We filled our bellies with the syrup-sweet tangerines. Then as darkness descended, our heads would rest against the side of the car, and despite the constant vibration of the engine, the Sandman would gently close our eyes. And that was one of George's memories. And, you know, as I look back, I know that one of the reasons that we were really so healthy is because we ate so many fresh fruits, which, of course, I always think of Jamaica as having the best fruits in the world. And now when I go to the supermarket here in the States, and some of our listeners will know that I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and, you know, we don't grow any fruits here. We have peanuts. But we have, of course, imported fruits from all over in our supermarkets. But nothing reminds me more of Jamaica than the tangerines, which are usually, I get them at the farmer's market. And because you know why? You can peel them with your fingers, as Georges say, and start eating it in your car. And that's what I usually do. As soon as I get in the car, I'm pegging those tangerines. And I now as I read his poem, I realize that one of the reasons I do that is because it does remind me of home. It really does remind me of home. And I see we have a caller, 941-770-941. Hello.
Hello. This is Donna Robinson. Can you hear me?
Yes, Donna, I can hear you. Did you hear my story about the tangerines?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. Yeah, that was, one of the things that's kind of interesting that I've learned is, and he says it also in his book, is that one of two things we Jamaicans, he says, wax most poetic about is food.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I would say that there's three, but he says in his book that there's two, and of course, you know, one of them is about making love, but he says that's another story.
Ooh.
And that's another story. And all, but I, being a friend of Jamaicans and hanging around you, I've come to find that there's actually, to me, I don't know about that one, but the two that I know about is the food and the music.
And
the food is very important, and I've noticed that there's certain things that are consistent with it. And in reading a lot of his stories, his short stories that he has food intertwined in almost all of them in some form or fashion. And, I mean, it's almost like he's still tasting it, and he can still feel it running down his chin. And, I mean, it was and I'm going to tell you, one of the things that was kind of interesting to me, being, you know, I'm from Georgia, so first I want to say there, we do have apple trees and pear trees.
Ooh, I forgot about the apples. Sorry about that, Donna.
Watermelon and sweet potatoes. But at any rate, one of the things that he talked about that I thought was pretty interesting was he had this story called Mango Time.
Mm-hmm.
And as I really didn't know very much about mangoes until I went to Hawaii, and then I saw that, you know, they hang from the trees. But as an American, I really was not that familiar with mangoes before, nor the fact that, you know, there were different types of mangoes. Like if you go to the grocery store, he talks about, In his story, he says there's a number 11 hairy black mango.
Oh, no. That is three different mangoes you're talking about. Number 11 is one mango. Hairy is one mango, hairy mango. And we have so many different kinds of mangoes. And incidentally, we have common mangoes and I suppose not. We never call them uncommon mangoes. But they're like the queen of, or the Cadillac of mangoes, which would be St. Julian, East Indian, and Bombay. Those are the three ones that are, you know, the cream of the crop then. And common mangoes would be hairy mango, which means that it's sort of stringy when you eat it. Mm. And black mango is a totally different mango. It's more delicate, and the meat is would not have as many strings. Or that's why they call it hairy mango, because it has a lot of strings, get in your teeth, and you can really suck on the seed of the mango. But we have so many different species of mangoes in Jamaica, really. I mean, I can't even think of all the different kinds that we have. You know what I mean? And here, when I go to the supermarket, it seems like all the mangoes look alike. Well, it's not that way in Jamaica.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to correct you on that. I think you talked about all three of the mangoes. And he might have written about all those three. But I wanted to let you know that they were all different kinds of mangoes.
Yeah, well, he mentioned the St. Julian, the Bombay, and the East mango also. He says that most people prefer those mangoes. So now I know what you're saying, that, you know, those are like the preferred ones. But he was saying that with the Bombay, you can eat it with a spoon. And I'm like,
spoon, yes, that's true. I can. My mouth is drooling now.
It doesn't have a seed in it, that like the other mango?
All mangoes have a seed. But this particular mango, you can actually take seed out by twisting it back and forth. You cut it at a certain angle. Then you twist it back and forth, and the seed will just come right out. So the rest that you have there will be like a cup. You know, it's cupped. The meat is cupped in the skin after that. And because you took the seed out, there's a hole. So you can now take your spoon. It would be sort of the shape of a coconut, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know it's two different things. But then you could take the spoon then and eat the meat of the mango with the spoon.
Wow.
I see we have another caller, 718-379. Are you there? Let me open up. Would you like to say hello? Would you put your... If caller number 718-379 would like to join the Labrish, you can put... strike one on your telephone, and I'll see that you're putting your hand up. Well, I suppose they just want to be a silent listener. So go ahead, Donna. Oh, yes, the hand is raised. So we'll open it up. Welcome to the Backyard Labrish.
Hello.
Who do we have here?
This is Lay.
Calling from?
New York.
Well,
the
welcome.
Bronx, home of the Yankees.
All right. Welcome, Mr. Yankee Lay, Jamaican Yankee.
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about mango time.
I wish you would stop. Because the Bombay is my favorite.
Okay, and Donna has no experience of a Bombay.
Well,
so he mentioned in his book you can eat it with a spoon, so I was just trying
correct.
To fill her in.
Yeah. The meat in that mango is like almost like jello.
Right.
You know, compared to the other ones that you have to negotiate with your teeth.
Right, like the hairy.
Oh, I don't like hairy.
I know.
For that very reason.
Right. What about black mango?
That's a good common mango.
Oh, you hear that, Donna? Did you hear that? And that's how we would refer to those mangoes. You know, it's a common mango. Well, I think it's because it's a lot more plentiful. You know, there's a lot more of those than you would have a Bombay or an East Indian or a St. Julian.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Do you know why they call them common mangoes, Leigh?
Well, for the same reason you just cited, that these mangoes, the hairy and the robin and those are mangoes that you could get in anybody's field or in any grown wildly, so to speak.
Right.
Whereas the St. Julian and the and the Bombay are mangoes that you cultivate and watch and nurture. Because
and they're there are a lot.
It's a fancier manger.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're a lot. They take a lot more care. Number one, and number two, I think they don't take as long to mature. That they're not big trees like the other mango trees. Am I
That's
correct?
That's right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are you getting the feel for it, Donna?
Yeah. Yeah. So does that mean that you all don't have like the mangoes that we see in our grocery store?
No.
The mangoes that you see in the grocery store are mangoes that are grown for export by a country, so that you know they're not your little backyard or even front yard garden type variety. These are mass produced, so to speak. So you can find different varieties of these mangoes in Mexico, Puerto Rico, Panama, all the islands, but they vary, and in both in sweetness, sucrose content, and the varieties are endless. But those the handful of mangoes that
here.
Sorry,
okay, can you have those here?
I didn't hear you.
No, we can't get any of those here in the United States, huh?
It's possible, but again, you would find these kinds of the fancier kind that we mentioned in somebody's yard, for instance, in Florida, where they might graft the mango to any other kind of mango tree and still come out with a small little that's not very good grammar, but small tree on a big tree. In other words, when you graft it, and so you can graft your Bombay mango onto a number 11 mango tree, as we did back home.
Wow. Well, I just want to say that, you know, this, in reading his short stories, there were little things that were kind of interesting. Like, for instance, coconut. For me, you know, when I think of a coconut, you know, something that you know, you could put on maybe some candy or put, you know, with a cake, make a coconut cake and stuff like that. And he was talking about how they put it on their skin, almost like lotion or something, and how they use it in their hair and, you know, use it as kerosene oil and use it for water. And, I mean, just so many, you know, different ways of using the coconut. And I was like, wow.
Not only that, in the old days, Donna, they people in Jamaica were very, very resourceful. And they would, I don't know if Lee might remember this, but like the people who worked in the homes, in those days we had, I don't know what floors were made of, but when the coconut itself, before it's hulled, you know, before you take off the outer portion.
Now, this would be a very old coconut.
Oh, yes. It has to be really, really dry. And they would cut it at a certain point, and it would become a brush. You remember that, Lane?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It would become a brush that they would use to polish the floor.
I bet I can remind you of something that you might not remember.
Which is coconut?
Well, in the very old days, they would put the coconut, the dried out coconut, into mattresses.
Koya, was that the Koya mattress?
That's correct.
Oh my gosh, you're right. I didn't even remember that.
That's my age, buddy.
Wow.
I'm telling you,
people were so resourceful in those days, because, you know, in those days, we didn't import a lot of things on the island. And you, Donna, I know you might not, and Americans and friends of Americans that have not traveled a lot could not really relate to this. But when you're on an island, you can be totally cut off from everything else. So in the old days when you didn't have a lot of ships coming in and they didn't bring certain things, you made your own things from whatever grew on the island. And that was a way of making, let's call it a piece of equipment that they would need to polish these beautiful, what were the floors made out of? Because the shine on them, you know, was just so, the gloss was so high just from using that brush.
Yes, well, they would use the brush in combination with, for instance, the kind of orange that we call civil oranges.
Mm.
And they would treat the floor with that. And
with the orange rind.
When the orange rind and the juice that came out of that particular orange
was like lemon oil polish. Oh my God, those people
right.
were so smart.
And
because
then,
now you get lemon oil polish.
Yes,
wow.
And then use the coconut brush
uh-huh.
to polish. And I can tell you, like my grandmother's living room, I could not walk barefoot in that room.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it would slip,
yeah.
and my feet, the soles of my feet would actually burn me because it's so shiny.
Yeah, I remember that. And I remember the helpers that used to walk to clean these floors. And George talked about in the book, when they're doing it, and because I think those people were so musical, they would do Mosquito 1, Mosquito 2, Mosquito Jump in a Hot Callaloo. And as they would, in other words, Donna, they would be actually making up a tune as they were polishing the floor.
Well, this is typical of Jamaicans in those days all over the island. No matter what they're doing,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
they're doing it to some
music.
Tune.
Right,
some tune.
Can I tell you one of my memories? I remember one of my aunts, her husband was like a supervisor at KSAC.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to supervise the road crew that fixed the roads. And I remember her taking me, I don't know how old I was, to him at this particular day. I remember it so clearly. And there were the men, the laborers, let's call them men, were digging the roads with the pickaxe.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like three or four of them standing in a line. And there was one who was singing. And as he came to a stop, all of them would go down with the pick at the same time. I actually saw that.
Yeah, well,
they were called digging songs. Remember that, Leigh?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is not unusual to see the same thing amongst prisoners, for instance.
Right. Right.
Who would you know?
In the old days.
Well, even I don't know if they do that now because prisoners don't do hard labor.
Oh, no.
They watch
mm-hmm.
television.
Mm-hmm.
But the whenever they're doing hard labor, they would do it to songs and tunes because it would keep them uniformed
mm-hmm.
by
mm-hmm.
singing in a tune. You know, it's almost like marching.
Right.
You know,
right.
march to a tune. Nowadays, we march to bands.
Right.
So, same thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to, something is going through my head, but I can't remember the tune, but I remember, but this man would just be paid to sing part of it, and then the others go down with
uh-huh.
the chorus.
Yeah. Well,
and
you know,
I was so fascinated by that.
You can even extend that to people who used to row.
Row, uh-huh.
Row these big...
The canoes, yes, yes.
Boats,
So some music and singing has always been part of our culture.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, always.
Mm-hmm.
Donna,
yeah.
are you still there?
I am, yeah. You know, speaking of this food, I had never had, you know, even with the bananas. You were talking about the bananas, and I was like, wow, you know, until... one day, you cooked the banana, and it was a green banana, and I was like, I've never had a green banana before. And he talks about it even in here, that how you boil the green banana, and then it's a vegetable as opposed to a dessert or a ripe fruit. And mm-hmm. then how, you know, it's made into a porridge and just all kinds of things.
Oh,
you could
yeah.
put, you know, coconut on it and different things. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
just,
yeah.
you know, just within itself when you think about, I mean, because for most Americans, you don't experience a lot of that. You might experience maybe, you know, oxtails or some curry chicken or something. And he talks about that. But he talks about it, and he makes it seem to me as though that was not a part of, I guess, the mainstream eating. It was different or something. And I was kind of wondering about that, because he makes it seem as though that was a different type of food when you would eat, you know, like a curry, you know, goat or chicken or something like that. I mean, was there like different, you know, types of food based upon, you know, where you lived or, you know?
Well,
that?
That's a good question. That's a good question, because I remember as a child, I'd want, you know, my father was a minister, and he would go to different parts of the country. And I remember once going to St. Elizabeth, which is a place that is near the parts of it is actually on the ocean, and Treasure Beach. Leigh, have you ever been to Treasure Beach?
I can't remember that I've been to Treasure Beach, but I know the area.
Okay. And I remember clearly that those people went out to sea to fish every single day. And we would go from wherever this village that I was staying, I don't remember if we walked, I think so. And we would go down to the beach when the canoes come in, and they would string, you would see the fishes jumping. You know, they were still alive. And they would pick them up and string them on like a coconut leaf thingy, you know, part of the, they strip the coconut thing or something and string the fishes up, and they'd still be jumping. But I noticed that the people there had, they cooked sort of different from the people in Kingston or South Lamar, which is the what I knew more of. They would cook, they had a lot of gungu, please. You know what that is. Jamaicans would know that, what that is. I don't know if Americans call it that, pigeon peas it would be. Are you familiar with pigeon peas, Donna, Miss Friend of Jamaica?
Yes, I am. Yes,
okay.
I am.
Well, this would be in the green form, you know, because it would grow, you know, they would cultivate it. And they would pick it in the pod, and then they would open the pod, and the peas would be green. And in that particular place, they would eat they cook this with seasoning, and they would eat it with the fish. And that is something that we would not necessarily do. I don't remember doing that in Kingston, you know, lay the gungo, green gungo peas and the fish. Another thing they did in that particular part of the island was they had their bammies were made a lot thinner. And when I see the tacos now, I sort of remember that. It brings back memories of that. But they would also do the bami in like almost like a wafer, thin, and they would put this green gungu mixture inside of the bami and roll it like a taco. And I'd never seen that done in Kingston.
Yeah, well, you know, you might expect that in some areas of Jamaica they would cook differently, because in some areas, you have just Indians, and Indians
mm-hmm.
cook differently.
Right, right.
For instance, where Aunt Helen was, Helen Helps, she
uh-huh.
was an Indian, one of my mother's great-grand-aunts.
Uh-huh.
In that area, you wouldn't see that kind of food in Kingston, or even
right.
South Lamar, as you're talking.
Right,
so,
right.
Let's say, on the fringes of that particular district, you would have a similar kind of food, maybe not done exactly as the Indians used to do it, but close enough, and certainly wrapping something the way you were describing it before is could have been the influence of some of those Indian type cooking, because they use wraps in various ones, you know,
right.
What they call it. Oh, I forget.
But do you remember something that used to be wrapped in, but I think it's banana leaf?
Oh, yes, dokono.
Right, and what is the other name for dokono?
Polento?
Well, that's perhaps
it's
a Spanish name.
Polenta is an offshoot of dokono.
Okay. Well, in South Lamar, I used to hear it called blue drawers.
Well, that is a very loose description of it. You wouldn't say that in front of your mother.
Right? Donna, did you hear that?
Yeah, what is
that? That is what the common people would call it. I suppose because of the color of the leaf once it's boiled. And this would be a mixture of cornmeal.
No,
and
I think they boil the thing. They, first of all, they put a portion of it in the leaf, in the banana leaf,
mm-hmm.
and then they tie it up literally with string or whatever, and then they boil it.
Put it in boiling water.
Boiling water.
Mm-hmm.
Then when that's done, they take it out and
cut it up.
Not yet. I mean, they leave it for a while till it's not as hot. I mean, and maybe even cold. And then you open it up and cut it up. Each person getting one.
A quarter.
Well, it depends on how large they are, but usually you would expect to get each person gets one of this.
One of the drawers.
Yeah, one of the dokono.
I mean, you're putting coconut inside of it?
Well, the mixture of this cornmeal and coconut.
Coconut milk.
Coconut milk, maybe,
uh-huh.
and whatever else. I really don't know the
raisins
recipe.
And sugar, I think.
Well, that is really making it fine for Christmas. But
really?
If you don't have raisins, you have these little coconut chips in there.
Oh.
You know.
Okay.
So, but it's the nicest thing. And
that sounds yummy.
The Spanish makes a similar thing at Christmas time, and I don't remember what they call it. And people in Panama make a similar thing because you know they're all derivatives. These people are people whose relatives or parents came from Jamaica or Barbados or Costa Rica and Nicaragua, all along that route, and they all eat similar things, similar kind of foods.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think that's like what you were talking earlier about the Indian influence? Do you think that particular dish has more of like a Spanish influence?
That's possible, very, because I was amazed that when I had an employee at work whose mother used to send that stuff for us at Christmas time, and after that, I realized that during festive times, especially Christmas time, the Spanish people make that. You know, I should say Latino rather than Spanish, because the people in Spain would never know this.
You never know.
But you know, he was talking about some dumplings, and he said that there were some big gray or brown ones, and I've never seen gray or brown dumplings before. I've only seen the white ones that, you know, you use in stew. And so
another kind of worms now.
Well, because we have cornmeal dumplings too.
That's
you make it's not just all flour. we have a mixture of cornmeal and flour. Mm-hmm. See what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And that one, you only know dumplings, that like
the
chicken
the
and dumplings
one.
You're thinking
yeah,
about?
Yeah,
the flour dumplings, right?
Flour
exactly.
dumplings.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
have that too, but we also have a mixture of cornmeal and flour.
Yeah, that seemed to be a better deal because to all you nutritionists, the mixture of the two would be
more powerful.
A better thing for your diet, I suppose, than eating just a plain old flour.
Right. Well, it seems like the older. Sorry.
Gray. They're gray or brown. How do they become gray and brown?
Well, it depends on what they're cooked with.
With, yeah.
Yeah, if they're cooked in the same pot with certain things, but like take bananas. Bananas have a lot of iron in them, so they could darken the water. You see what I mean? And if the dumplings are cooking in it, they could take on the color.
Yeah.
But the color would not turn us off, whereas I think foreigners are more... you know, inclined to be skeptical of something if it don't look attractive. Island people are not like that. Especially in the old days.
If you went to Kingston, for instance, and went to the Terranova Hotel,
mm-hmm.
on Sundays they have a brunch.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things that we're talking about end up... in a buffet.
Oh, really?
But this is a very fancy hotel that people from all over the world go, and you wouldn't want to cook all of these things in the same pot.
Oh no!
So
yeah.
it ends up looking, as you were saying, a lot more
attractive
to the eye. And once you taste it, you want to go back for a second, you know.
Uh-huh.
Now,
yeah.
A question. Did he mention anything about soup, S-O-U-P, soup day, in his book?
I think so, but he said something about sweet S-O-P, sour S-O-P.
Oh, sweet sop and sour sop. That's
no,
a food.
That's a food. No, I'm talking about soup. You know, and then Saturdays, we used to call Saturdays soup day.
Yeah, uh-huh. Saturday was soup day.
And you would get soup, different soups, and mostly you would find people making beef soup.
Beef soup, mm-hmm.
And these things that we're talking about that you would put, the dumplings and stuff like that, you throw everything in that soup. You know?
Well, the Saturday soup, Donna, would be a meal. The soup would be a meal.
Yeah.
So within the soup would be the meat, the vegetables, and the carbohydrates. Everything would be in the soup. Whereas I remember when I was really, really young and I used to go to Savlamar, Aunt Lola had a very, sort of structured house. And we would have soup every day. We would have a different kind of soup every day before we had the actual meal. But Saturday is a soup day. It's sort of different. It was more of a broth, some kind of broth that wouldn't have everything in it. But on Saturday is the one pot meal where everything is mixed up together. So we could have gungu soup. And it could be green gungu or dried gungu. We could have red pea soup. We call it red peas instead of red kidney beans. Or we could have beef soup. And the beef soup would have, what do they call it here, Lay, where we call it turnips. But they have a rhubarb? Is that what they call it here?
No, we used that yellow thing.
Carrots and pumpkin.
Pumpkin.
Pumpkin. And our pumpkin is different from the pumpkin you
color.
Get here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but it's interesting because we had I think right over the island, everybody would be having soup on Saturdays. I don't think you could go into a village, although we all cook, might cook different in different parts of the islands, but I think that it was like a national soup day. Wouldn't you agree, Lee?
Yes. That's why I mentioned, did he mention soup day?
Right. Well, he has several different stories in the book, you know, just all sorts of
I have
of
to get
stories.
That book because it sounds very interesting, and
I like the way
Donna extracts certain things from it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's very informative, you know.
Yes. He writes about traveling in the car to the country, traveling on the train, just different experiences, his own experience of growing up.
But I
know that a lot of Jamaicans can really relate.
Yeah.
To, if not the same stories, similar ones.
Well, you know, even with them talking about some of the fruits and stuff, you know, I remember here in Georgia, there's a market that you can go to that is very international. And I remember seeing something called star apples before, and
uh-huh.
I was like, that is the strangest thing. I wonder what it tastes like, but I was too scared to, you know. I mean, you know, I'm like, I'll try some things if people will talk to me about it. But I didn't know what it was, so I was too scared to try it. And he talks about these star apples and rose apples and Otaheite apples and
Etiote apples.
What do you call it?
Etiote.
Actually, it's Otaheite.
I'm sorry. That's how long I've left Jamaica.
Well, you know, funny, Donna.
And jackfruit and junips or something. And hog plums and June plums. And
yes.
I'm like,
we have so many different types of plums.
I went to a market in Vancouver. And a lot of the things that you just ran through were in this market, but not from Jamaica.
They were not?
They were from, like, Indonesia and places like those. And strangely enough, those places have similar things that we do.
Well, you know what that says to me? It just shows you the influence of Jamaica from so many
different
places.
Different cultures,
You talked about Spanish, you talked about Indian. Now you're, you know, and somewhere else already, you know. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's a little bitty country. I mean, it's like little sliver.
Well, you know, Donna, if you go back in the history of Jamaica, to even prior to Columbus landing, we're talking 1492 now, you know, and the Spanish had Jamaica in those days, and the next thing you know, the British had it from the Spanish. So you have two different influences there straight off. And for instance, if you look at the roads and the railway, that George was probably talking about in the book, you would see the influence of the people who built the railways, and that was the British.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there were parts of Jamaica. For instance, that school that he went to. At a point, you would be hard pressed to see one native Jamaican going to that school. You would see mostly Europeans going to the school. You know, so it tells you that from those days,
different parts of the island, you had more of those settlers.
Settlers is a good
word. So when did the Indians, because he talks about East Indians and different people, and I'm like, so when did they come in with their food and different things?
Well, the Indians came in almost like and probably with the slaves that came from Africa.
Yeah, they were indentured servants.
They were indentured people who worked the soil. in those days.
Mm.
So, you know, and then the Chinese also came in droves to do pretty much the same thing, but all influenced by the building of the canal. A lot of people went to assist in building the canal in
Panama Canal. Mm-hmm.
And couldn't, as we say, hack it. They couldn't keep up with the oppressive heat and the hard work. So they would not return to England, but they would come back up the different countries there, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and settle there. And a lot of them, since we Jamaicans by this time was English speaking, you find a lot of Europeans that spoke English settling there. And I'll tell you a personal experience. During the war, the Second World War, of course, we had I don't know if you know this, Margaret. We had a concentration camp.
Oh, yes. I remember the prisoners of war. I remember that.
And as a child, they had a barbed wire fence there.
Mm-hmm. Up our camp.
At up our camp.
Uh-huh.
And
I remember.
I particularly used to stop and, you know, well, we couldn't speak German, but I would try to talk to some of those inmates in the
These are Germans, Donna, that were
there. These are Germans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. A lot of Jamaicans don't know that.
Yeah. So when
anybody really knows that, I've never known that.
Yeah. So we had Germans out there as prisoners of war.
So when we turned them loose, a lot of them remained in the islands.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them settled right down in
Germantown.
Germantown.
Mm-hmm.
Some went to Savlamar.
Right.
And places like those. But,
a lot
you know,
of things Jamaicans don't know. A lot of things from the old days. And a lot of that was not really documented. It's just that's why I'm saying these stories are so important. They are so important. And I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. And we have a weekly show at 8 o'clock. We're inviting you all to come on in. Call us up if you have a question or a comment. I know that there's some people listening online. There's always some people listening online. But if you are you feel bold enough, give us a call. We're not chatting in the chat room yet, but we will be very soon. So we want to welcome you and to ask you to call up your friends or email your friends and tell them to check out Backyard Labrish. Every Wednesday evening, we're here just in the backyard, relaxed and labrishing about the good old days in Jamaica. Okay, Leigh and Donna, you're on.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, you know what? One of the things that he talked about that I thought was really neat is, you know, for me as a child, I remember, you know, when you could hear the ice cream man coming up the street, and you would like beg your mother for money so that you could run and get your favorite ice cream and stuff like that. And he talked about a couple of people. First it was the ice man, which I remember there, you know, people having like the ice box and they get a big chunk of ice and they pay that. And he talked about snowball man, which I remember a snowball man. But then he talks about a Dixie Doodle Man.
Oh, yes.
So, who is the Dixie Doodle Man?
That's the popsicle.
What is a Dixie Doodle?
That was just a name.
Yeah, well, the Dixie Doodle Man, you know, these people that sold icicles and popsicles and even snowballs would have different products. And one of the products that you might find, for instance, with the man selling the shave ice with the syrup on top of it would be Dixie Doodle. And the Dixadoodle would be a scoop of ice cream on top of that.
Uh-huh. I don't even remember that.
And you would, if you didn't have 3 and 6 pence, you wouldn't be able to. You wouldn't be able to participate in that.
you could only buy
delicate.
The snowball.
You could only look at it.
Oh my goodness. What, 3 and 6 pence? What is that?
That's probably less than a quarter.
That's
okay.
English money. You know, in the old days, Jamaica had English money.
Pounds,
and we were on the pounds, shillings, and pence. That's where the denomination.
They call it the sterling standard.
Right. So the pound was a paper money, right?
Yeah.
The shilling was a silver. Was it silver?
Yeah.
And the pence, you remember the Willy penny?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. This was the currency that we used. And it had it went down to a farthing, which is the lowest denominator. Was I right, Lane?
Yeah.
So we would have things that would be 3 and a farthing, you
this
know?
This was the same currency used in England, right?
Right, 3 shillings and a farthing, which was the smallest coin or the smallest amount. And also in our measurements, remember, Leigh, I don't know if you would have a gill. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
A quart and a gill. A gill was the smallest measurement. Mm. So if you were buying peas or whatever that was measured, you would have a pint, a half pint. And what is the next one after that? I don't remember. But the gill would be just a little measure. It would be sort of family of the farthing, which would be the money. But these are all the British, you know, just like the British had in Britain, I suppose.
Yeah, it was the same currency was in England.
Then we would talk about, and some of the folk songs would have about the Kwati and Jill. You remember that?
Well, Kwati would be a localism.
Is that what that would be?
Yeah.
So how much was the Kwati?
There was like a 3 farthing.
Yeah, 3 farthings was a Kwati.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that is going way back.
Just a memory on that.
It's interesting, we have 6 more minutes, but it's interesting to know that I don't think the children growing up in Jamaica now even know about the currency that used to be used in the old days.
For one, they're on a different standard now. They don't use that.
Right, right, right.
They use the decimal standard.
Right, right,
so,
right.
So, you know, they're talking about dollars and cents.
Uh-huh. But I'm saying I don't even know if historically they would know about it if you ask
Well,
them.
It depends on, you know, the schools that they go to now down there. I don't think they are, they bother too much about what was, and especially since it had a British stamp on it. I mean,
right,
I even want
to
go there.
Yep. So that's what I'm talking about, Donna, that the kids that are growing up since we have been, we are become independent. I don't know if when they're older, they might be interested in what went on before they become independent. But there's really nothing that I can see from just doing my research that is being taught about the past.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know the things that we're talking about, that we even had a different measurement in those days and different currency in those days. They wouldn't know that.
And even the fruits that you were talking about.
Oh, yes. Some of them are extinct.
Really?
Some of them are extinct because a lot of those grew in Kingston. Now, remember that a lot of these things were brought in by some of the traders and the people who you know, went to different parts of the world and brought things that they thought would grow in the climate in Jamaica. And that's how it was introduced.
Well,
So you would have some things in certain parts of the island that were not native to the island necessarily. Mm. They were brought in. Because I remember one particular kind of mango that my grandparents had on their properties, and it was ladyfinger. And I know by the time I was leaving Jamaica, some people didn't know of a ladyfinger mango. Did you know it, Lee?
No, I don't think so.
A ladyfinger was similar to a East Indian, only it was a smaller version. A mini.
Well, you get a mango here now from Mexico as well as from Puerto Rico, I think, that look like a... looks like a
East Indian. Uh-huh.
But it's closer to what you're talking about.
Oh, and it might have come from one of those countries. I don't know. But we had acres and acres of it. I remember walking through the Mango Walk in Mountain View and going over to crossing over a little river or stream.
That's the point I wanted to make. All of these, not all, but most of these fruits and trees have been cut down to make habitat.
Housing. I asked my friends' children who would be around Stephen's age if they know Macafat. You remember Macafat?
Macafat? I just remember the name. I don't know.
It's a hard shell, very hard shell. It was yellow. It was round about the size of a lemon, but it was very round. It has a hard shell. When you break the shell, there was meat on a seed, and that is Macafat. I remember that clearly. Mm-hmm. But it's just wonderful going over these memories, and again, I want to remind our listeners that Backyard Labrish is the place to come and hear about all the old stories from the senior Jamaicans. And this is the passionate Jamaican Margaret, your Labrish host. And we have Donna, who's a friend of Jamaica. And we have Lay calling us from New York. He's the Yankee Jamaican. And we're Labrishing about the good old days. And we were talking about our guest of last week, who's an author, George Graham, and he has a book out called Jamaica Remembered. Mm-hmm. And Donna, who's a friend of Jamaica, has just been reading some of the stories, and we older Jamaicans are filling her in on what some of the terms mean and what some of the foods that we remembered when we were growing up. We have 1 minute to go.
Question before we get off. He said these are the things that we niam. Which he says it means to eat, niam or niam.
Niam.
That is a Patwa word to eat.
Oh, and I said whatever it is, and then he says, but the best thing he loved was the buns and cheese. And I was like, I gotta give me some buns and cheese.
That's a whole another discussion.
That's for another Labrish, and it's almost time for us to say goodbye. And I want to thank all our listeners and our callers. And hope you'll join us next week for another Backyard Labrish. So we'll talk about the naming another time. We have a couple of seconds. So, Donna, you want to say goodbye?
Well, I just want to just say I really appreciate his literature because it's really enlightened me, and I thank you all for filling in the gaps.
All right. Well, you're welcome, and we ask you to invite some of your friends to Jamaica next time. So we can fill them in.
Well,
and Mr. New Yorker, you want to say goodbye to our listeners?
Good to talk to you all from New York, the home of the Yankees.
All right.
Yeah.
And this
see you again next week, maybe.
Oh, real? Yeah, we'll have more Labrish. So we invite you to ask your friends to call us up with their questions if they want to know about the old time days of Jamaica. Or if they just have a story they'd like to share with us. So this is Margaret signing off from the backyard. And I want to say bye again to everybody and ask you to join us next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.